Good afternoon, folks. Hour two underway. Chad Adams here, sitting in for Pete Callender on News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. It's been a spectacular show so far. We're going to ever higher heights. With us right now, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, someone who's shot to meteoric fame, someone endeared by the grassroots of North Carolina and elsewhere, someone who's reviled by the left that's tried to attack in an unbelievable way. And never have I seen a candidate more attacked by the left. There must be something to it because they're losing their minds. Now, Mark Robinson, welcome to the show, Lieutenant Governor. How are you today?
Hello. How are you doing, Chad? Good to be here.
It's fantastic to have you. Now, a lot of people, the only thing they know about you, they either know about, you know, some of the videos that they've seen or heard about, or they know these horrific things the left has been trying to label you with. And yet, you know, 4 years in the Lieutenant Governor's office, you've been sitting on the state Board of Education. Tell folks a little bit about your background and how your success story is something a lot of people don't know about.
Well, you know, I call myself kind of Joe Everybody. I mean, I have this American Dreams success story that started back in 2018. Of course, it started long before that. You know, I have a long history of being a blue-collar worker. I was a small business owner. I served some time in the United States military. So I have a long history of working hard and a lot of successes, a lot of failures, but mostly successes. But my story really started back in 2018 as it pertains to politics. I went out to city council, gave a speech. It went viral. Folks started calling me to run for office. I started thinking about it. I decided to. I ran for lieutenant governor, and here I am. The experiences that I've had, however, throughout my life have helped shape my political philosophy and the work that I want to do here in North Carolina because I really feel like I have a deep connection to the people here in the state.
Now, you have traveled from the mountains to the coast, from border to border, and delivered. I got to speak right prior to you in Brunswick County one time as we were celebrating the founding documents that were put out in front of the courthouse there. And your passion for this country and the opportunities afforded not just to you, but for all, and why you want, you know, why you pursued public office. What has that experience been like for you? As you said, kind of the American dream, success and failure, overcoming obstacles. What has that been like for you?
You know, I call it a kind of strange odyssey, but it's been very good. It's been very satisfying. And the reason why it's been satisfying is twofold. Number one, is because we've been able to meet so many great people across the state and hear from so many great people across the state about their experiences and about the things that they would like to see happen in the state. And the second reason is because we've been able to be an agent of change here in many ways. As Lieutenant Governor, we've been able to, you know, do some things like, for example, we got $12 million for apprenticeship programs, which is serving some folks well this very moment, and we hope to be able to do even more of that. We were able to put our foot down in education and make a stand for school choice and take a stand against objectionable materials in our schools. And so we've been a change agent since we've been in office, and we think that that's been a good thing. Overall, it's been a very good experience, and we have a ton of support all across the state. So it's been very good.
Now, overall, you know that the attacks have come at you full bore. The political left has picked out various pieces of speeches, things you said in front of churches, things you said elsewhere, and they boil that down to one line and try to call you anti-Semitic. They try to call you, you know, anti-LGBT. But, you know, I've seen the rest of those talks, and in context, they're not what the left makes it out. Has it been tough to see the way you get misrepresented out on the campaign trail or to your family and the way things you see from the national media, things that are said about you?
It is tough, but we expect it. And, you know, we know it's going to happen, and here's why it's going to happen, Chad. It's going to happen because those folks do not want to talk about the substantive issues that all North Carolinians face. They don't want to talk about our economy. They don't want to talk about safety and security. They don't want to talk about infrastructure. They don't want to talk about anything else. They want to continue to talk about just a few issues or try to throw the issue off on some Facebook post from 2010 or 2015. And why do they not want to talk about the issue? They don't want to talk about the issues because on every one of those, they lose. They don't want to talk about the fact that under Democrat control, we were $3.5 billion in debt to the federal government. And under Republican leadership now, we have a $5 billion surplus. They don't want to talk about the fact that under Democrat control, nobody wanted to come here and do business because taxes were too high and regulations were too stiff. But now under Republican leadership, we now have we're the number one business destination 2 years running. They don't want to talk about those issues, but those are the issues that we're going to focus on. The issues are going to help the state grow, and they're going to help families and their businesses and the places where they work grow.
Now, over the past 4 years, you presided over the North Carolina Senate. Phil Berger, I would argue, the most powerful Republican in the state in many ways. He's led through a lot of the issues that you just discussed. But a governor has to define themselves beyond the legislature. We've seen that with past governors, whether it be Martin or Pat McCrory or even the Democrats that have served in that office. How do you see the issues? What are the issues you will focus on should you find yourself in the governor's mansion next year?
So it's real simple for me. The two things we're going to focus on, we're going to focus on our economy, and we're going to focus on our education system. When it comes to our economy, the reason why it's so important to focus on is because our economy is built on pillars, Chad. It's built on the pillars of public safety, public education, health care, infrastructure, and housing. And the governor has purview to place people over the institutions that hold sway over those things in many ways. DOT is infrastructure. DHHS is healthcare. DPS, Department of Public Safety, that's your public safety. The governor appoints people to the school board. There's your public education piece. Those agencies, those state agencies, can literally be the driver of success here in our state if those agencies are not run by agenda but are running number one, following the law, and number two, following some common sense standards that will help businesses to be able to succeed. Not breaking the law by any means, not breaking the rules by any means, but following those laws and making sure that we can have a segue through those agencies to make sure that businesses are successful. I separate out public education for one reason, because I think we need to make some substantive changes there. To get the agenda out of the classroom and get back to classical education, get back to getting our kids career ready, getting them so that when they leave K through 12 education, they're ready for the United States military, or they're ready for a 4-year university, or they're ready for a community college, whatever it may be. We need to get them there. And I tell you this, our Constitution mentions a sound basic education, and that's fine. But that's not going to be good enough in the Robinson administration. What we're going to be searching for, we're going to be searching and seeking to get world-class K-12 education in this state, because our children are going to be facing issues on the world stage, and they're going to be competing on the world stage, and we want them to have a world-class education.
Being joined right now by the Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, who's running as the Republican nominee for governor. He'll be facing Josh Stein this fall. And Mark, you know, you're known for your passion. You're known to be very outspoken. And I've got to ask you, what inspired you to run for governor?
Well, you know, when we ran for Lieutenant Governor the first time, we were overwhelmed by the amount of support that we had across the state. We had a 9-way primary in that race, and we won without having a runoff. We got 33.1% of the vote, which by all counts is pretty outstanding. I mean, we absolutely dominated that field. And then as our tenure in office, during our tenure in office, our support has just grown more and more in different sections of the state and throughout the populace, and folks really started calling on us to run for governor early. And so once we got right down to the wire making the decision, it was an easy decision to make, because it just seems like it just could be a natural transition. The folks wanted us to do it. We continue to get gain support every day on that front. So it was a kind of easy decision to make.
No doubt, not unlike the president, who had many folks in his primary, you had some opposition as well. And how do you see bringing, because it's going to take, you know, a unified party and many in the middle to win this race. Do you see that happening? Do you see the GOP coming together behind you?
I do. And the thing that we want to impress upon folks is this. You know, we've already had our battles about a lot of social issues here in the state. And, you know, wherever you fall on those issues, it's fine with me. That's, you know, everybody's, of course, entitled to their opinion and their stance. But I don't think you're going to find too many people who are going to argue with me over the fact that North Carolina really has an opportunity to grow its economy and wants to grow its economy. And it's just going to make a difference. Who are you going to have in office? Are you going to have someone in office as part of a team that got us out of debt from the federal government and has the number one business destination in the nation? Or are you going to have someone who's part of the team who had us in debt and had it so no one wanted to come here and do business? I think the choice is clear, and I think our party needs to stand firm, and we all need to line up and do the right thing and make sure that we have a governor in this state that's finally going to be pro-business, is going to be patriotic, and really understands the heartbeat of this state and the people thereof.
Well, obviously, your opponent almost bred to run for office. He was part of the John Edwards campaign. He's been in left-leaning groups and organizations. He has been in office for a long time. What would you tell folks about what you believe is the difference between your vision and your opponent's vision, and why should people vote for you?
The difference couldn't be more clear. I am an individual who has experienced many of the things that folks here in North Carolina have experienced. I lost not one but two jobs to NAFTA. I've been a small business owner who struggled under the thumb of overburdening government. I've seen those things. I've been knocked down and had to come back. I know what some of the struggles are to some of the folks that lost their jobs and have lost their jobs in places like Canton and Asheboro and other places. I know the struggles that they're going through right now, and I know that we could bring some great solutions to those folks because we share a common heartbeat. My opponent, on the other hand, and this is, you know, let's just deal with the facts here. He's been a politician, a lawyer, and a politician for the majority of his adult life. That's what he's done. He is completely out of touch with the people of North Carolina. He does not share a common lot with them, and he doesn't have that vision that gives him the ability to be able to look the people of North Carolina in the eyes and honestly say, I understand what you're going through, and I understand the solutions necessary to help you go through it.
Now, that is certainly something that they are trying to articulate in his social media, trying to say, hey, look at me, I'm eating ribs in Asheville. Look at me, I'm petting a cow. I can relate. And yet, rural North Carolina seems to be very distant from him. To what degree do you believe the issue of race plays into this? I think that's one of the things that bothers Democrats most. You, African-American, running against, you know, Josh Stein, the guy who's been in office, seems like, forever. And how do you think that race plays into this with you as a Republican nominee?
I think that is the major issue for the other side. The other side sees the threat. They understand. They've seen the success of the Republican Party here in North Carolina. The story that I've repeated several times just in this interview about how the Republican Party has turned us around in the state. They now know that I have a great relationship with that legislature and many of the people who are responsible for doing that. And they know that if I become governor, as a black Republican, if I become governor, and put plans into motion to continue to grow this state in every sector, not just one or two areas, but in every sector. Some of those areas that have been left behind for decades. If we show that real progress and make those real strides, folks are going to sit up and notice, and they're going to do it across the board, black, white, male, female, everybody. They're going to sit up and take notice and say, hey, this is somebody I can get behind, and they know it can change voting dynamics in this state for decades to come.
Well, as we get toward the end of this interview, two things. One, Raleigh is a city and that is known to love insiders. They don't typically like outsiders. You are someone who is not in that system for very long. They'll expect you to put together a team. Do you foresee yourself being able to put together that team to lead if you were to become the governor of the state? Do you see that as something with the connections that all those people, and they're trying to turn you and twist you a million ways? Do you see yourself being able to put that together? And then how can people find out more about you?
Absolutely. We see ourselves being able to do that unequivocally. We're already seeing that now. There are a ton of folks out there great folks from all across the state that are jumping on board. They want to be part of this movement. They want to be part of this team. And that is our major focus right now, is to make sure we organize that great team that can lead North Carolina into its future. So I have no doubt that we can do that. As far as how folks can reach me, they can reach me at markrobinsonfornc.com. That's markrobinson, F-O-R-N-C.com. And I would urge them to please remember that this is going to be the biggest governor's race in the country. The Democrats are probably going to throw $100 million at me or better to try to defeat me, and we need every strong Republican and everybody who believes in us to come on out and support us. And so we're going to need folks to do that. But they can go there to find out about us, and they can go there and donate and do all the associated things.
Again, Lieutenant Governor Mark Robinson, thank you for being a part of the broadcast.
Happy Eclipse Day 2024.
Yes, they picked that. WBT looks at the solar calendar, and that's how they decide that I get to sit in. I figured it out. They're looking at horoscopes and stuff, and they pick and they say, hey, Chad, on this day, solar eclipse 20, set in stone years ago. Little did they know that would be, they knew. I didn't know. Little did I know, I guess it was, that solar eclipse day Chad would be on. So, Chad Adams sitting in for Pete Callender. I'm just kidding about all of that. I know some people will take that seriously. I'm just kidding. If you'd like to get in on the broadcast, if you'd like to call, feel free to do so, 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110. If you had a comment about Mark Robinson's appearance, we just had him on the show for the past couple of segments. Before that, Dan Bishop. So he had two of the highest ranking folks running for office. And it's going to be, I will say this, well, you know this. This is going to be a crazy election year. This is going to make the appearance of a supernova in the sky later this year, which that's what I'm hearing, and an eclipse seem like passing things. You know, when Mark Robinson said they're going to try to spend $100 million against him, this is they, meaning the Democrats, cannot afford to have a successful black Republican be in a governor's mansion. It's something, especially in North Carolina. I mean, Roy Cooper's got higher aspirations. Being followed, Josh Stein losing is not something they can tolerate. And the unfortunate reality for Democrats in the state of North Carolina is the fact that, Kamala Harris has been here four times now. Joe Biden's been here a couple times. They're going to come back at a certain point. By Labor Day, if they can't move the needle, you will see the national Democrats pull out. If things remain, I'm not saying they will. Right now, between now and Labor Day is a millennia. Any number of things can happen. But the trend, I would have thought that something large would have happened between last Labor Day and now. But if you're an observer of politics in any manner, you would know that nothing, if anything, the barometer's gotten worse for Democrats. Joe Biden is not getting any younger. The barometer's worse, not better. The issues are worse, not better. The issues for them, now they're looking for some glimmer of hope in the economy, but it's not resonating. People know, no matter what, prices are still significantly higher than they were. It is tough. It's just Bidenomics. That's why you don't see Democrats going out and touting Bidenomics anymore. They're not talking about the inflation reduction plan because it didn't reduce. It was just a massive expenditure. Notice that they're staying away from that. They're even staying away from their massive rebuild restructure plan. I mean, after, you know, East Palestine, which took and the president's staff is so tone deaf, it took them over a year to get to where the train accident happened. It took them a while to get up to Baltimore, which is not that far from where the president lives. They just, at the national level, Democrats seem tone deaf to the issues that we're all seeing. They certainly are tone deaf on the border. Remember, Kamala Harris was put in charge. Root causes was what we have. We'll address the root causes. It'll deal with all of this. Completely tone deaf. When national tragedy happens, it takes the president's staff forever to figure out how to get there. I don't know if they're trying to get around Biden's naps. I don't know. Roy Cooper, governor of the state of North Carolina, is doing everything. He shows up like a good puppy dog wherever the Biden shows up. There's Roy. No matter what Biden says, Roy's just kind of happy, 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 happy. Josh Stein, not really there that much. Media is giving them a softball pass. Donald Trump says something, they'll probably run back to Robinson. But if Joe Biden something, they'll leave Josh Stein alone. You would think that with all of the controversial comments made by Democrats, that the highest-ranking Jewish official in the state's history, Josh Stein, would be asked questions. How do you feel about Biden's policy toward Israel? How do you feel about the situation with Hamas and Gaza? But Josh Stein gets a complete and total pass. Our media is completely and utterly bereft of the ethical composure to ask tough questions. They'll go after Mark Robinson on everything. He breathes the wrong way, they'll go after him. Josh Stein goes and has ribs in Asheville, post a picture. Nobody says a thing. It is where the media in North, the Charlotte Observer, News and Observer, those are the same company, WRAL, they've lost their way. It's kind of like, you know, at the national level when you watch CNN or MSNBC and you see them completely bereft of the ability to even attempt to have some objectivity. And that's the real sad reality for a great many of the media types. You know, they despise the front runners. They despise the front runners in the Republican Party for governor and at the national level. They don't want to give them any coverage whatsoever. I mind you, I think many of the stations will do everything they can to reject ads from Republicans this year, even though they desperately need the money. I think they'll try to find a way. What can we do? What excuse can we find to not run the ads? And here's what's going on. The Real Clear Politics average, it's what I like. There are a lot of individual polls. There's some polls that are straight up legit. Some polls lean left. Some polls lean right. And so what Real Clear RCP does is they take those polls and they put them together in an aggregate and average them out so that you can kind of see what's happening state by state. And Team Biden, they just replaced all their pollsters. They don't like what they see. So rather, this is the funny thing to me, typical Democrat lefty response, rather than address the reality of how the public is seeing the administration, they're hiring new pollsters to give them better numbers. And here's where we currently are. In Wisconsin, all of the polls put together, Trump's ahead by half a point. Now, that's a state Democrats definitely need to win. Arizona, Trump's ahead by 4.5. They really need that one. You remember the Kerry Lake and Hobbs governor's race. The Democrats had a good run out there. Georgia, Trump's up almost 4 points. Again, the Democrats thought that would be a wall. Michigan, Trump up 2.8. Pennsylvania, Biden up by 0.1. That's a state they shouldn't have to worry about. And by the way, Biden underperformed a lot of the polls on Election Day last time. North Carolina, Trump's up 4.6. If Trump were to win the state of North Carolina by 5 points, it would be a free fall for Democrats down ballot. Even Elaine Marshall, yes, the institution for Secretary of State that is Elaine Marshall, might be in trouble if Trump were to win by 5 points or more. My prediction. And in Nevada, Trump's up by 3.2. So in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 states, Trump leads in the overall averages with the exception of Pennsylvania, where it's basically a dead heat. That is a serious problem. At 1:54, in just a few minutes, the partial eclipse that Charlotteans will be able to bear witness to will kind of begin as the moon begins to move into the path of the sun, thereby allowing folks to be very careful in their viewing of what they may see. But the totality won't be here. But about 83, almost 84% blockage. So still an event worth noting, not an event worth getting in trouble over, though, or hurting your eyes. So please be careful, but it'll be interesting. Probably get a little shady, 80% of the sun being blocked at all. Now, I want to talk a little bit about, there's a couple of issues as we head into the fall. It's math. The problem for both parties is always mathematical, ultimately. I mean, it's retail politics, it's kitchen table stuff, it's what you, the listeners, and your families and your relatives care about as they head to the ballot box in the fall. There certainly is a great deal of enthusiasm on the right at this time. The Democrats find themselves looking for enthusiasm. The greatest, there's two issues they have great enthusiasm about, but that's waning, and that's the abortion one. And by the way, the former president issued a very clear, no equivocation, no spin, on his position on abortion. You find Democrats struggling with that issue. They use poll-tested phrases like, we support reproductive freedom. We don't want doctors in their sexual freedom. It's the weirdest thing. They're trying to find a way that you will deeply care about this issue. And so they don't want to discuss partial birth abortion. They don't want to discuss when they, as Democrats, Josh Stein is notorious for this, they don't want to tell you when they think it's too far along. They don't want to discuss. They don't want to say, well, at 9 months is too far, 8 months is too far. They want to act as if there's a magic number and they agree with you. Whatever your number is, that's their number. It'd be like going to Vegas and the dealer agrees with you about what the cards are saying. It's not it. They're trying to get away with that, whereas the Republicans are saying, hey, each state, and Donald Trump said this in his video, he believes, and many Republicans do, and many other people too, that this is a states' right issue, the states' right. The Supreme Court got it right. It should not be a federal issue. It should be up to the will of the people in individual states as they move forward. Some more strict, some less strict. And he said that. That's pretty clear. Get it out of the hands of the federal government. This is not something that the founding fathers ever intended to be a part of the framing of the country. This is not why we went to war with Great Britain. This is not why we sheared off from the most powerful nation on earth. It is not why. This is not a federal issue. And he's right. It just is. Regardless of how he may feel about it or how I may feel about it, this is a state that you can fight it out at the state level. The second issue is immigration. Actually, there's three. The mathematical problem there. So abortion is where Democrats think they have something to crow about. And the other is Donald Trump. Those are the two issues. The economy is not their issue. Education is not their issue. Even though they've tried to act like you having a choice in education is bad, that it's going to defund public schools. You're going to see them keep trying that. It's not where they're looking for the magic phrase. Reproductive freedom is the magic one, but they're finding that a lot of what they tried with Donald Trump backfired. It's not working nearly. They didn't. They thought if they threw all this lawfare and they sued him enough and indicted him enough and they'd throw him under a bus and he'd be ancient history, but it instead empowered his... Here's what Democrats don't... And if they ever got this, they would be a lot more competitive. A lot of folks see what's happening to the former president and said, wait a minute, you know, if Democrats disagree with me, they can come after me. They can find something that happened 10, 12, 15, 20 years ago and come after me on this. And that terrifies people. That's not the way government's not supposed to be wielded as a weapon against political enemies or people you just disagree with. You see this at the coast a lot when a lot of elected officials will pursue trying to stop you from building a home of a certain square footage. They shouldn't be allowed to do that. They want to encroach upon your freedom to build. And they use politics as a way to do that. And they're using lawfare against the former president. It's backfiring horribly. And I think Democrats now realize this isn't working. It's not working with Fannie Willis. It's not working with Jack Smith. It's not working with Alvin Bragg. It's not working with Letitia James. All of these folks look more deeply embedded as Democrat activists than they do about enforcing the law. But those are the two issues. And abortion is not going to resonate the way it has. It could. I don't think it will, because there's too many other issues that people are like, wait a minute, I'm watching my net worth get affected. I'm watching my ability to make choices get affected in other parts of my life. I'm watching. And Donald Trump isn't what they said he was. He's not a dictator. In fact, the opposite is true. As they scream, it's interesting when fascists scream fascism. When the people who want government to be more powerful and to have more say-so over your life call the other people fascist, especially someone who wants to cut and gut the size and scope of the federal government. Now, spending, both parties have a massive spending problem. That's a push at best. And some of the COVID spending, you know, that's, they may have an issue there, but the Democrats voted for it too, so not so much. Now, when we get to the other side of the break, the last hour, by the way, you're welcome to give us a call, 704-570-1110. You have comments about Dan Bishop, comments about Mark Robinson, any other topics, maybe something I talked about, maybe other issues, maybe the eclipse, who knows, whatever your observations, thoughts, live, thrive, and survive, whatever it is that makes you tick, you may want to get in on the conversation, 570-1110. They'll make sure I know you'll get right to the front of the line. I do want to get to a piece by Michael Barone. Now, Michael Barone, very interesting commentator. He's been around for many, many years. I had the good fortune of meeting him in Asheville several years ago when he gave a speech up there. And one of the few people who had a very interesting background. This is just side note. He knew at that time, he knew the general demographics of every congressional district in the country and had been to all of them. All 400 plus, he'd been to all of them. And when you would throw a congressional district out, South Dakota 1 or, New Jersey 3, he knew those districts and knew kind of the demographic. He had certain names that he used for those. You know, certain people, whether they wore certain kind of clothing or the racial makeup. But he has a very interesting take on the Democrats' inability to understand and grasp and deal with the immigration issue. Now, I think his observations are spot on, so I'd like to share those because I think he's correct. And the other issue I want to get to in the next hour is how the political right has re-engaged and reinvigorated itself throughout the country. And one of those, there's nothing more fascinating than watching what's happening in Nebraska right now. And I'm not going to give it away. I definitely want to get to that issue. But the issue in Nebraska is a sign that the people on the right are engaged, they're animated, they're organized, they're excited, and they're not going to give up the ghost on this stuff. They're not going to go quietly into that good night. They're going to fight back. Democrats aren't used to that.